When it comes to government hearings, the only type of witness I enjoy being is a hostile one. That's why I intend to answer every one of their questions with a question.
Were you aware that all of the entertainment and food was provided by rec center teachers?
Would I have stayed if I knew that?
I don't know. Would you have?
Would you have?
No, I wouldn't have. Did you hear Leslie make any promises?
What constitutes a promise?
A quid pro quo.
Oh, do you know Latin?
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
Are we done?
Of Guelph Politico, and you are listening to our ongoing coverage of the 2014 Guelph municipal election. Thank you for joining me. It's been a while since I posted one of these. Unfortunately, just circumstances. I have talked to almost all of the Guelph mayoral candidates, but because of some personal sickness issues last week, I've sort of had to take it easy, even in the midst of the busy election season. So there you have it. That's my excuse. Anyway, so you've already heard John Legere, and he was the first Politicast of this season posted. Coming up today is Jason Blockhouse, and in the next couple of days I'll be posting these in quick succession just to play catch-up, so you'll be hearing Andrew Donovan and Joseph St. Denis. I have talked to all of them so far. I am still waiting to hear from Cam Guthrie and Karen Farbridge about establishing a time that I can talk to them, and then I will follow up, hopefully next week, if not the week after, with those interviews, and I would love to get all the candidates on the Guelph Politicast before too much longer. I also want to draw your attention to the Guelph municipal election page on Guelph Politico, and it's at the right hand side of the screen. Just click on the little image that says your face here next to the image of City Hall. That'll take you to a page where it lists all the election candidates in all the wards and the mayor races. You click on your name, it'll take you to the podcast if it's a mayoral candidate, or it will take you to the candidate questionnaire if it's one of the ward candidates. There's been great responses so far from the various city council candidates. They will keep coming in over the next couple of weeks, and I will keep posting them as I'm getting them, and it makes for some great reading. So if you're looking and wondering who to vote for in your ward, that's probably a great place to start. Hopefully that's not immodest. Anyway, today's all about Jason Blockhouse, candidate running for mayor. Jason Blockhouse is a professor at the University of Waterloo. He is a teacher in the Social Development Studies program at the Renison University College there at the U of W, and he has settled in Guelph, which is not too far from where he grew up in North Wellington County. He discusses on his website his reasons and motivations for wanting to move back to Guelph, and he also discusses his reasons and motivations for wanting to run for mayor of Guelph, not the least of which is that politics and law and social reform are part of his areas of study. But he also brings with him a rather accomplished list of things he'd like to do. He wants to bring forth something he calls smarter government, and we talk about what that entails in the podcast. He also outlines his reasons why he felt the city needed a third rail between incumbent Mayor Karen Farbridge and her presumed front-runner challenger, Councillor Cam Guthrie, and he talks a lot about why he thinks he is the ideal candidate for those looking to not vote for one of those two, and he considers them opposite sides of a spectrum, and he talks about why he would be good for the middle, And for anyone in the city of Guelph looking to vote for someone who's a little more middle of the road in terms of their politics. Now, is he middle of the road in terms of his politics? I'll let you people decide. Here is Jason Blockhouse, and I caught up with him recently in downtown Guelph. Jason Blockhouse, thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Why did you want to run for mayor? You had a fairly eloquent answer on your blog, but what was some of the things that went into your decision?
Well, it's true. I put a lot of thought into my answers and anticipated those kinds of questions in drafting my website and the material that I add almost every day. What I saw happening here in Guelph is what has happened in the past, and particularly in the last election, where you have an incumbent who, for various reasons and in various circles, is quite unpopular. And then you have a primary challenger and some fringe candidates. And the primary challenger is so extreme that, of course, the challenger gets a lot of votes. David Birdwhistle got, I think, as I recall, over 10,000 votes in the last election. But still, you know, the challenger is seen as sort of too far, too extreme, too angry, perhaps, or too radical. And so people will vote strategically and keep the incumbent in office, notwithstanding errors and unpopularity and disaffection and so on.
Or stay at home.
Or just stay at home. And that's something that you've addressed in your on your blog. That people just throw up their hands in despair and I don't like either candidate, so I'm not going to vote at all. And that seemed to be shaping up with this election, with Cam Guthrie throwing his hat in the ring in at the start of January, although some would say he's been campaigning for the job for 4 years. And an incumbent who now is perhaps more unpopular than she might be willing to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. So you have this possibility now in a two-horse race where the incumbent is so unpopular that the sole viable challenger, the primary challenger, may actually win. And once again, the primary challenger is someone who I think many would consider too extreme, or at least out of touch with the sensibilities of a lot of people in Guelph. Mm-hmm. So what do you do if there's a two-horse race shaping up with a couple of fringe candidates and so on, and you don't feel comfortable with either of those choices? Then you don't vote, or you think, well, I'll do it. Now, a lot of people who might make great mayors can't do it because they have family commitments, they have job commitments, and so on. So, I mean, that may be true across the board, where the people who are best qualified to be mayor are actually preoccupied with other things. And municipal politics is messy, and a lot of people are content to let other people handle it. But again, if you've got this situation where an incumbent is running again and is widely unpopular for, I think, good reason, and you've got a challenger who makes a lot of people uncomfortable, and until very recently, Cam Guthrie didn't have a platform at all. He was effectively running on his name, as I pointed out in my website. Yep. Hey, vote for me, I'm not Karen Farbridge, which is not a platform. So I decided, well, okay, I am an academic. I teach courses in political ideology and social action and social policy, education and law. These are my, this is my academic background. This is what I teach. Mm-hmm. And the University of Waterloo encourages faculty to run for office. It's a form of public service. I regard it very much the same way. Mm. So I would hope that Guelph is still the kind of place where good people are willing to stand up, put their names in the, throw their hat in the ring, and be heard, and that elections can still be won on the basis of ideas and not on the basis of personalities or campaign budgets, which is another another piece of the pie, the money.
Right.
So mine is a campaign of ideas, and people have responded very positively. Mm-hmm. The forum poll put me at 4%. That was 3 weeks into 3 weeks after I had launched the campaign, and the poll took place. I believe it was on a Friday, and my signs had only started going up, and so you know my name wasn't really out there yet. So I was quite pleased to have at that stage polled 4%, and I would hope that. At this point, now that my name is out there and a lot of people have read my website and you know a lot of people have requested signs for their lawns and so on, that it's going to make a difference in terms of poll numbers and therefore credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a cumulative effect, right? That there's a kind of groundswell that if enough people realize, hey, this guy is worth looking into,
mm-hmm.
right? That there's a certain momentum there that. That takes on a life of its own. You don't have to buy that sort of thing. It's it just happens. So, and what I'm hearing from a lot of people is that they, for various reasons, they don't like Karen Farbridge, they don't like Cam Guthrie, and what I have to say makes sense, and whether they agree with it entirely or not, and most people, of course, when they contact me, is to say that they do. They're at least glad that there's another voice, that there's another option. There's another choice, which is a bit ironic because that's what Cam Guthrie was, you know, invoking for the first 8 months. Oh, I give you a choice. You don't like Farbridge? Vote for me. Well, that's, you know, now there's more choice.
Well, let's talk about some of your platform because on your website you advocate for smart government.
Smarter government.
I was going to ask, why isn't the government so smart right now, and what can you do to change that?
Well, the 7-point platform mm-hmm. elaborates what I mean by smarter government, and mm-hmm. and by implication, then, you know, in suggesting that we should be doing this, and I will do this, 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 and this, that's smart, and what we're doing, what we're seeing now, is not so smart,
mm-hmm.
right? I think I can't be sure of this, but I think in one of Karen Farbridge's earlier campaigns, her slogan was "Smart Government."
Mm-hmm.
So smarter government is a you know kind of an homage, I guess, of sorts. But I mean, it could also be one could say it's a relative term, so it could also relate to Cam Guthrie, in that sense. So. In any event, I think some things are sort of common sense truisms. So if you have an administrative structure that is unnecessarily large, and ours is, different people say, well, you know, is it too large? Is it not too large? Well, let's look at some comparison cities. And if you look at single-tier municipalities... with a population of about 120,000, the comparators are places like Barrie or Kingston. Kingston is a great comparator,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's a university town and a single-tier municipality, and about the same population that we have. And somehow they're scraping by with almost 50 fewer sunshine listers, right? Mm-hmm. So this is not an insignificant number, and it's not just the salaries, it's the benefits, the pensions, and all of that over time. So how is it that Kingston can get by, and these are 2013 figures, with 144 sunshine listers, and we need 199 and counting, as far as I, you know, again, these are 2013 figures, so for all I know, there could be more than that at this point. And of course, there's more to the administration than just the people who make over $100,000 a year. There are many layers of bureaucracy, and the bureaucracy, you know, that's maybe a pejorative term. Many layers of administration, shall we say? But I will, you know, try not to use a pejorative term, or a term that might be taken pejorative. Many, many layers, and this is not only costly, but it hasn't. It hasn't worked out well for Guelph. It hasn't prevented costly mistakes like Urbicon and you know, the organic waste facility and things like that. So what is the rationale? What is the purpose? I've recently released a press release on my website on the Guelph Factor, my thoughts on the Guelph Factor, mm-hmm. because that's something that's in the air these days.
Yep.
Guthrie has talked about it, and Karen Farbridge has talked about it, and so I don't know, I assume you've seen it, but
yeah.
You know, the Guelph Factor can have several different definitions, and maybe that's part of the reason there's some confusion.
Right.
And my take is, well, you know, if the Guelph Factor relates to a kind of cautious approach on the part of most Guelph citizens, I would say, to large-scale development, to, you know, commercial development, and a cautious approach to growth and change, then I think it's a good thing. I think that that's, you know, that kind of it ties into the environmental sensitivity and respect for our agricultural heritage and architectural and agricultural heritage, all of that stuff. I think that's the reason why a lot of people choose to live in Guelph.
Yeah.
And so if that's what the Guelph Factor refers to, you know, this affinity for what we've got, and a reluctance to change, and again a cautious approach to growth and development, I think it's great. I think it's a good thing. It's something to be cherished and respected. If the Guelph Factor relates to our, shall we say, large, you know, bloated administrative structure, our unduly large administrative structure, and that is another possible interpretation of what the Guelph Factor is. I think that's what Guthrie is referring to.
Yeah.
The idea that having so many layers of administration that it makes it difficult for businesses of any size to do business here because of all the red tape, as he calls it. Well, yeah, sure. The Guelph Factor is a bad thing, and it's bad for all kinds of reasons, and not just the ones that he points to, saying, "Oh, it's bad for business." Well, you know, it's actually bad. It's worse for small businesses and local businesses than it is for big business.
Yeah.
So why is that? Well, because of the deep pocket principle. Mm-hmm. So the larger entities can afford the costs of delay,
mm-hmm.
and the costs of bureaucracy, and, you know, all of that. It's very expensive if you're sitting on a property that you would like to develop, or you've got a business plan and it needs approval. You know, you have to keep paying your staff and your advisors and your lawyers and all the rest of it, and approvals can take years.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? It means that the big guys can afford to work here despite the delays, and the little guys, including the local guys, can't. They can't afford those delays,
mm-hmm.
Those costs, the administrative burdens, the red tape costs.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
So it may not have been an intended consequence, but the bureaucracy or the administrative structure that Karen Farbridge has built up over the years, and which the current council, including Cam Guthrie, have sustained,
mm-hmm.
has actually worked to the benefit of large-scale developers and to the detriment of local, smaller-scale business interests. And I'm hearing this not just from developers, but from local businesses of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
It is very hard to do business here because of the bureaucracy and the red tape, and if that's your definition of Guelph Factor, well, there you go. But actually, it's worse for the small guys than for the big guys. So to the extent that the Guelph Factor exists on that definition, and to the extent that we can attribute that to Karen Farbridge, Karen Farbridge is responsible for the kind of development we've seen, the large-scale stuff, the big-box stuff, and the rest of it, that many would argue is changing not only the face of this city, but our political sensibilities as well, right? Because people in the South End, and I understand this, okay? People in the South End feel like their relationship with the city is such that, you know, the city only sees them as a revenue stream,
mm-hmm.
you see? And that shouldn't be that shouldn't be the purpose, the primary purpose of growth.
Yeah.
And growth should be economically beneficial, but the ironic thing is, the part I can't figure out is that growth here in Guelph seems to cost us more.
Mm-hmm.
So why would anyone be in favor of growth if it doesn't benefit us?
Mm.
Right? And for some reason, even though we have an ever-expanding tax base through rising property values and added numbers of residential, commercial, and industrial properties coming online,
mm-hmm.
we still have rising tax rates, rising mill rates.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make sense to me. That shouldn't be necessary. So, and so people are wondering, well, where is all the money going?
Right.
And part of that, of course, is, you know, this cumbersome, this unduly large administrative structure. And another big part of it, as everyone now appreciates, is the cost of errors and the cost of lawsuits and the legal fees and so on. So Urbicon is monstrously expensive. And for Karen Farbridge to suggest that that's not going to have an impact on our property taxes is, well, it's incredible.
So how would you slim down government? Would it be like that George Clooney movie, Up in the Air, where you bring in the guys to fire people and you have the meeting and, like, here's your severance package and see you later?
You can't operate that way.
Yeah.
No mayor has the power. No one can just arbitrarily fire people.
Mm-hmm.
Karen Farbridge should know that now.
Yeah.
You know, so...
That's a good point.
You know, so you can't just terminate contracts. You can't arbitrarily fire people. People can be dismissed for cause, and it mm-hmm. may well be that, you know, as a consequence of what the courts found in the Urbicon case, it could well be, depending on how things go with the developer's suit against the city on the calculation of development charges, you know, it may well be that the courts will actually find as fact that errors were made by particular individuals within the administration, in which case potentially they could be terminated for cause.
Yeah.
Right? On my website, I say, look, you know, even if we do find ourselves in a situation where we have to maintain our current levels of administrative staff and the current number of sunshine listers, we need to make better use of their skills. So I have proposed a moratorium on the routine hiring of outside consultants, because as a lot of people know, not only is our administration expensive, but the people that we hire, whose job description includes doing surveys, you know, and feasibility studies and things like that, their work is often farmed out to consultants from large corporations, often based in Toronto. And, you know, in some cases this may be necessary, it may be required as a matter of law, it may be required by insurance agencies and so on, bonding agencies, but in a lot of cases it's not. It's unnecessary duplication. So it doesn't make sense to have, to me, that you have this this staff of qualified individuals who are hired to do certain jobs and then hire a whole bunch of other people on top of that to do the same stuff, either instead of them or alongside them. So this is duplication, and some would call that waste.
And you're not the only one who's sort of come to that point, and there are a couple other of the mayoral candidates who have talked about greater engagement and engaging with citizens, getting their feedback on mm-hmm. issues rather than going to outside sources who do the same job.
Right.
Like, what it seems like such a simple thing to say, let's use the knowledge and the ideas of the people here rather than
right. Well, then let's actually do that.
Yeah.
Because we've seen a mushrooming in the number of citizen committees,
mm-hmm.
And I know from having been involved with some of those committees that, including one that has just been disbanded. You do have on these committees some very knowledgeable and engaged citizens with a broad range of talents and skills, and the committee will make recommendations, and those recommendations will be ignored. or the decisions will already have been made based on the findings of this consultant or that consultant. So the committee then is merely window dressing for the administration to say, well, we consulted with it, but you know, these are foregone conclusions because the administration has already hired the consultants to write reports, has accepted those reports, has redrafted them and presented them to council, and has merely checked a box, you know, maybe figuratively, that oh yes, citizens have been consulted on this one, and look, here are the minutes from this committee meeting, you know. So. So I would describe as I have, it's just window dressing. It's not actual consulting, and it's not making effective use of the talent that we have here in Guelph. Which again, you know, if you've got the people here in Guelph, the engaged citizenry, and you've got the people on staff already who live here in Guelph, who know Guelph and who know about planning and engineering and the law, well, why do you need, except in the circumstances I described earlier, why would you need, as a routine matter, to go and hire Akon, you know, or to go and hire Ketchum Consulting, or to go and hire some consultants from Oakville or Toronto? So that's it is a form of waste. It's unnecessary. It's unnecessary expenditure. And, you know, one might say in a different set of circumstances than the ones we're in, oh, but it was worth it because, look, we saved all this money, or, you know, we avoided this liability, or, you know. So, you know, well, that obviously hasn't been the case, right? We have, with all of this expenditure and investment in administrative resources, we haven't saved any money, and we haven't avoided legal liability, legal fees, and all of that. We haven't avoided costly errors.
And you've posted on in your platform, on your website, that you would have a moratorium on getting outside consultants.
I would impose a moratorium on the routine hiring of outside consultants.
Let's imagine for a minute you are elected mayor on October 27th. What would the first year of your mayoral term look like?
Well, it won't be an easy first year. What I am proposing to do is what a lot of people in Guelph from all different parts of the ideological spectrum, what a lot of people want is real transparency. And specifically, they want an independent audit. People want to know where we stand financially. Mm-hmm. I want to know where we stand financially. A lot of people think the cupboard is bare. And there have been persistent calls in some circles, particularly from grassroots Guelph, for an accounting, for an independent audit. Now, you don't have to be on the same page politically as grassroots Guelph in order to be concerned about the financial circumstances of our city. Mm-hmm. So I'm sympathetic to that aspect of grassroots Guelph, their platform or campaign or their, but that is a concern that is shared way beyond the membership of grassroots Guelph, and that's important to note. So I would open up the books because really we can't proceed with confidence with any other agenda items, including capital projects, unless and until we know our financial situation. And I have maintained that Karen Farbridge's insistence that we must be in good shape because of Standard & Poor's credit rating, that we have an AA+ credit rating. Well, that's great. That's wonderful, you know. But a credit rating doesn't tell us anything about the appropriateness or sustainability of expenditures, of city expenditures. The credit rating tells us tells lenders that we're a good risk in the short term, at least until there's another assessment or upgrade or downgrade.
Yeah.
So the credit rating is a message to creditors that we are a good risk. It is not a message to citizens that our that our administrators are managing our money well. And so I don't buy it when Karen Farber says, or even, you know, she's sort of very often hiding behind Ann Papert, and Ann Papert is saying, oh, well, you know, look at our credit rating, look at our credit rating. And I was like, okay, yes, well, that's very nice, congratulations. But we still need to see the books. You see? And so I understand grassroots Guelph's frustration, because I'm frustrated about that too. And a lot of other people are, whether they are, you know, the kind of people that would vote Liberal or NDP or Conservative or whatever. This is a, you know, the city finances and the quantum, the level of our property tax rates, that transcends political ideology. That's just something we all care about because it's we care about our homes and our neighborhoods and communities and quality of life.
Is it a matter of getting assurance that we're sound, or is it a matter of a lot of us think that there may be something that's hidden in the numbers?
Well, here's the thing. People make adverse inferences. If Karen isn't forthcoming, and she's the one who's, you know, talking about open government all the time, and for some reason, you know, won't disclose, won't open up the books, won't give answers to the questions that people are asking, then people infer that she's hiding something. Maybe she is, maybe she isn't. But the best way to dispel these kinds of things, right, these kinds of suspicions, these adverse inferences, is just to open up the books, right? So, I mean, it's a bit of an extreme analogy, but, you know, you have those birthers or whatever in the United States that were challenging, you know, that thought, you know, wrongly that President Obama was born outside the United States. And he, you know, said, no, it's not true, it's not true. But ultimately, how did he deal with the birthers? He disclosed, he presented a copy of his birth certificate, right? Well, open the books, right? And that will dispel any of the rumors. Just be honest, right? That's another thing that bothers me, is that Karen Farbridge's campaign, now that she's rolled, both Cam Guthrie and Karen Farbridge rolled out platforms after I did.
Yep.
And, you know, Karen this time around seems to be going with the whole caring community thing, right? And I could talk for a long time about this, but, you know, for now, it's enough to say, look, if you really care, you would tell the truth, right? And not hide behind, you know, an $80,000 political machine to try to sell or distract, sell a different message, or distract from what people are, you know, focusing on and concerned about. So you want to, you know, take attention away from Urbicon, you know, because, oh, well, it's not going to hurt us, there's no effect on property taxes, and what we should be focusing on is building a caring community. And, you know, that's what she says she's been doing all these years. Well, you know, I warned you I was going to be talking a lot.
I'm watching the timer.
But here's the thing, you know, mayors don't do that. You don't build a caring community, it already exists. I mean, we're already good people here in Guelph. And to be told that we could be better people if she were mayor again, I mean, I find that kind of offensive, to be honest. I think that people are good, and to the extent that people are good, it's because they had good parents and good teachers and good role models, and, you know, but for any individual to take credit for, you know, 122,000 people, you know, being, you know, good or not, that's a bit rich.
When you put it that way.
You know, and here's the, so she's like, yeah, we're making progress and we don't want to jeopardize that progress, so, you know, vote for me and get me back in office and we'll, you know, we'll continue this project of building a caring community. I think Guelph is and has always been a caring community. And I think that to the extent that we have a large and growing bureaucracy, I'll use that term in this case, then it actually makes people less caring. Because if you've got people with clipboards standing over you while you're doing your job, right, then you are first of all, you feel somewhat dehumanized, like you need to be watched and you can't be trusted. And, well, let me give you an example. Hey, I've got a lot of support from, and this may not come as a surprise, I've got a lot of support from the transit workers here in Guelph, Eh? They don't like Karen Farbridge for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. So the lockout, anyone?
Yeah.
And, you know, with Cam Guthrie being of the political stripe that he is, obviously as unionized public sector workers, you know, sort of wary of Cam Guthrie as they would be of any right-wing populist.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, anyone who might be inclined to back privatization or, you know, other kinds of things. So, you know, so I'm the guy that says, look, let's spend less on our administrators and more on the people who actually deliver the services that contribute to our quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Anyway, where was I? Oh yes, so bus drivers have been telling me things like this. You know, there's one bus driver who, this is a story from an elderly fellow at my church. He says there's this one bus driver, he knows her by name,
mm-hmm.
and that's, I think, true of a lot of riders. This is not a robotic type of relationship. This is a human relationship. There are people who take the bus every day,
yeah.
and they get to know the different drivers on that route.
Yeah.
And the drivers get to know that this is an actual human relationship, and as such is a caring relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So this fellow at church told me, he's probably in his 80s, and he has mobility issues. And it's very hard for him to cross the street to get to the bus stop on the far side.
Mm-hmm.
And this is particularly true in the winter, and he likes to go to the rec center to swim.
Mm-hmm.
A bus driver once saw him almost get run over and sort of thrown into a snowbank, stopped the bus, pulled him out of the snowbank, and from then on stopped the bus on his side of the street, even though that's not an official stop,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not an authorized stop.
Right.
But that driver knows that that she can pick him up, you know, on the return route,
right.
on his side of the street. He doesn't have to cross the street, and he will, you know, he will ride the whole circular route to get to the rec center.
Right.
Okay, and the only times she doesn't do that, stop at that unauthorized stop, is when there's a supervisor on the bus, because then she gets sanctioned for that, you know,
right.
she gets written up for that, and you know, he knows as well, you know, they understand, you know, that, you know, at the times when she drives right on by, you know, well, there's a supervisor on the bus,
right.
Okay? So this is what I mean when there's, you know, somebody with a clipboard, right, an administrator, a supervisor looking over your shoulder, mm-hmm. I think it can interfere with being caring and compassionate. I mean, we all need rules are necessary, you know. I'm not saying everybody should just make things up as they go along. Rules are important,
yeah.
but what's also important is being able to exercise good judgment, right? When following the rules would lead to injustice, mm-hmm. and amongst legal scholars and lawyers, we call that equity, right? So equity allows for us to apply different remedies when strict application of the rules would lead to manifest injustice. It, you know, that's legalese.
Yeah.
What does it mean to, in reality? It means that we don't apply the rules, you know, when common sense dictates that applying the rules would cause hardship. Or another way, you know, we common sense or the kindness of our hearts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when a bus driver, you know, has somebody with a clipboard looking over her shoulder, she can't actually be human anymore.
Right.
She can't make a decision based on kindness. She has to follow the rules rigidly, which will mean leaving an old man at the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
An old man whose name she knows and about whom she cares very much.
Right.
They know each other. Right, and if you have a lot of people with clipboards, then you create a lot of automatons, a lot of robots, and the bus drivers feel that they've, you know, they're disrespected, they're dehumanized to the extent that, you know, they're overregulated. You know, I had another bus driver tell me that she was written up and sanctioned for taking a day off because her mother died. You know, now, you know, maybe that's an extreme case, but I'm saying, look, if you have more and more people with clipboards, you know, insisting that people follow the rules and not make exceptions based on the goodness of their heart, you know, and their relationships with others, like the bus driver and the old man, right? You have a less caring community, right? And so, you know, I think it could be argued that, you know, having more and excessive levels of administration and oversight is killing the care that's already there. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit rich for Karen Farbridge, through her $80,000 campaign spin doctors, to say that we need to build a caring community, when, you know, what's actually happening, what she's actually doing is making us less caring, right? With administrative overkill. And we have Guthrie coming along and saying he wants to start collecting unpaid fees and, you know, and all the rest of it, right? He says the city doesn't collect enough fines and fees. Well, what does that mean? It means, presumably, it means more bylaw enforcement officers, more parking tickets, more speeding violations. You know what I mean?
Well, I know there's a couple of million dollars in outstanding parking fees and stuff that just aren't collected. They keep sending the...
Right. So if he's referring to that, you know, the uncollected stuff, that's one thing. But is he also referring maybe to, you know, a potential new quote-unquote revenue stream where we have more bylaws, more enforcement, more tickets, and therefore more revenue? I hope not, because then you are, again, you're over-regulating and killing the human impulse to be good, right? That's already there. You see what I mean?
I do, and maybe to wrap up our time together, because we've covered a wide variety of things, where can people learn more about your campaign and your platform?
Oh, well, that's at www.jasonformayorofguelph.com. jasonformayorofguelph.com. And it's not a four-letter four, it's actual spelled out. jasonformayorofguelph.com.
F-O-R,
that's right. So, anyway, I'm glad for this, grateful for this opportunity to talk.
Well, great, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. Jason Blockhouse, it was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Adam.
And once again, that was Jason Blockhouse, candidate for mayor in the 2014 Guelph municipal election. You can learn more about Jason at his website, jasonformayorofguelph.com. All one word, jasonformayorofguelph.com. And that is it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. Tune in again for another conversation with a Guelph mayoral candidate, and again, those should be coming in fairly quick succession over the next couple of days. Andrew Donovan will be up next, followed by Joseph St. Denis. Also, keep coming back to Guelph Politico for the candidate questionnaires. All the candidates running in all the wards will hopefully respond to the questionnaire, and of course all their responses will be posted online as I receive them. Visit the 2014 Municipal Candidates page on Guelph Politico to see the list, and click on the name you want to read the questionnaire from, and it will take you to it if it has been received and posted. The theme music for Guelph Politicast is provided by The Crazy Pills and their song Break It Down. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean, and you can find the link to the Podbean host on the right-hand side of the page, and you can go there, you can listen to all the back episodes of the Guelph Politicast. And as always, keep coming back to Guelph Politico for all your latest election news and coverage and mayoral candidate interviews and candidate questionnaires. And failing that, you can also listen to me on the Guelph Hour, which is on CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca every other Thursday at 6 p.m. following the Gang of Four, which is also on CFRU. So you can catch me there as well. Otherwise, we will catch you here next time on the Guelph Politicast. See you then.